The Lord be with you. Today we hear the dramatic conclusion of last week's gospel lesson. And so, this week it sounds like everything is starting off well. At first everyone speaks graciously of Jesus, but by the end of the story they try to throw him off a cliff. So what happens? What's going on here? All right, so first of all, we have to remember that Jesus is preaching in his hometown, in the synagogue where he grew up. And he brings to them exciting news that the words of the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 61 are going to be fulfilled by God that very moment in their hearing, that God's promise of good news for the poor, healing and liberation is coming to pass right now. And so people speak well of Jesus. They're amazed, and they say, wait a minute, isn't this Joseph's son? It would be like if someone who graduated from Pleasant Valley High School here in town went on to become quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, we'd say, whoa, isn't that the Rodgers kid? He grew up here. How cool is that? But Jesus responds to them by basically saying, oh, what, just because I grew up here, you want me to do good things for this town? And then he tells them what God thinks about that kind of thinking. He tells them two stories. And the first of them, Jesus says, you know how there was once this giant famine in our land and everyone was starving and there were so many widows who were going hungry, and so God sent the prophet Elijah to help out a widow? Except she wasn't one of our widows here in Israel. She was a widow at Zarephath in Sidon? Yeah. When the people in the congregation hear that, they get really angry. Now, why do they get really angry? So, I don't know if you've ever heard the name Jezebel. Yeah, some of you have. Jezebel was a foreign queen who married the king of Israel. And Jezebel entices the king of Israel to start worshiping foreign gods. And then she goes on and orders the execution of hundreds of God's priests. And she even tries to kill the prophet Elijah. Now, do you know what country Jezebel is from? She's from Sidon. She is from the exact country as the widow, the one widow, that Elijah helps in the midst of the famine. Jesus is saying to his hometown congregation, instead of helping God's people, God helped their enemies. And so the crowd starts to rumble. But Jesus goes on. He says, you know how there's been lots of lepers in Israel's history? Well, the prophet Elisha was sent not to cleanse any of them except for a guy named Naaman the Syrian. Now, Naaman the Syrian was a general, but he wasn't a general in Israel. He was a general of the army of Aram. Now, Aram was a neighboring kingdom that was constantly at war with Israel, for decades, including for the majority of the prophet Elisha's ministry. Again, Jesus is saying to his hometown congregation, God is helping people, but God is maybe helping not God's people, but their enemies. Jesus has come home, and he's saying, God's blessings are being poured out today, but not for you, for the people that you hate. Now, I need to stop here for a moment, because sometimes there can be some confusion about this, right? Our passage today is not a condemnation of Judaism, and it's not a condemnation of Jews. I have to say this because this past week, after this shooting, or after the hostage situation in the synagogue in Texas, here in Chico, police have been finding and removing anti-Semitic posters put up around town. No, what's happening in the story is, first of all, you got to remember Nazareth is the town that raised Jesus. This congregation that tries to throw him off a cliff, this is the congregation that taught Jesus the Ten Commandments, that confirmed him, or as Jews would say, bar mitzvahed him. This is the congregation that taught Jesus the very stories about Elijah and Elisha that Jesus is now repeating to them. Our gospel lesson today is not a condemnation of the people of Nazareth. It is a condemnation of self-righteous religious people everywhere. And it's true throughout history, including our own history. So in the 16th and 17th centuries, Europe was convulsed in religious wars, not just between Catholics and Protestants, but between Protestants who hated each other. 3 centuries after Jesus, Christians would riot in the streets on a regular basis over the issue of whether Jesus was of the same essence of God the Father or of a similar essence as God the Father. You know, Saint Nick of Christmas fame, right? The jolly guy we think of delivering presents to kids. In real life, he literally punched a guy in the face over this issue. It may be hard for you to believe, but I am willing to bet that there is someone that when you see them talking on the news, maybe it makes your blood boil, or when you read their posts online, it makes your stomach churn, or if you run into them at family reunions or in the grocery store, your skin starts to crawl. And I bet if Jesus showed up and said, hey, today God is going to pour out just all possible blessings, but not on you, on that person, well, you might just blow your top. I know I would. I'd say, what? Jesus, are you crazy? That person, they're on the wrong side of everything. They, you know, they're short-sighted. They're liars. If they get their way, they're going to hurt everybody. And I might even be right. It was certainly true of Sidon and Aram, even if it wasn't necessarily true of the individuals that get helped in those nations. But we hear today in 1 Corinthians 13, that if we speak in the tongues of mortals and angels, but we do not have love, then we are a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. That if we have prophetic powers and know all mysteries and all knowledge and have all faith so as to remove mountains, but we do not have love, well, then we are nothing. And that if we give away all our possessions, and if we hand over our bodies so that we may boast, but we do not have love, then we have gained nothing. The people of Nazareth have right teaching. They have correct worship. They have perfect religious pedigree. But they do not have love as 1 Corinthians 13 describes it. They are not patient. They are not kind. The people in Jesus' congregation, they are envious. They are arrogant. They are boastful and rude, right? These are folks who insist that they get God's blessings first before anyone else. They insist on their own way. They're irritable and resentful of the fact that maybe God is going to go bless someone else before them. They rejoice in wrongdoing and not in truth. So much so that when Jesus comes and tells them the truth, they rejoice to try to throw him off a cliff. The people of Nazareth literally have Jesus in their midst, but they do not have love, and so they have nothing. Without love, all the rest of God's blessings are meaningless. I put great care each week into preparing my sermons, but if every other day of the week I treat you like garbage, my words are going to be meaningless to you. Yeah? Luke works so hard every week to ensure that we have beautiful music here on Sunday morning. But if our music is not about praising God and gathering us together in worship, if it becomes about our own egos or about making sure we get a good concert in the morning, then we are better off sitting in silence. We have a tireless social ministry team that works to make sure there are abundant opportunities for us to serve our neighbors as Jesus commands. But if we hand out food to someone in need and do not hunger to know who that person is as a beloved child of God, then it is we who are starving spiritually. If Faith Lutheran has right teaching and good music, if we have insightful sermons and we serve people with food and shelter every day of the week, but we do not have love, we have nothing. Nothing that truly matters. And this is true on a personal level as well, right? If I go on Facebook and I write a post that is factual, it's clever, it's grammatically correct, but it does not have love, the world has gained nothing. I might get a bunch of likes, but the kingdom of God is no closer in our midst than it was before, maybe even further away. And in my personal life, right, in my marriage, my wife and I, we sometimes get into arguments. And sometimes, at the end of those arguments, my wife, Annalisa, will say, I knew I was marrying Mr. Wright. I didn't know his first name was Always. Because inevitably, I always show that I am right, yeah? And it's one of these things where I may have ended arguments by proving the superiority of my position with incontrovertible logic. But I have never won an argument that way. Because there is nothing to win in marriage except for love. And love never fails. Because love never ends. That's what 1 Corinthians 13 tells us. Yes, love can be rejected, it can be insulted, it can be beaten up, it can be crucified, but love cannot fail because love never ends. Those things cannot stop it. It keeps going. The people of Nazareth, they can't throw Jesus off a cliff, and we can't throw love off a cliff, not God's love. It passes through our midst and continues on our way, inviting us to join it when we are ready to be transformed by it. This is what Jesus does because Jesus is God's love. Jesus is patient. Jesus is kind. Jesus is not envious, arrogant, boastful, or rude. Though Jesus does get blunt sometimes. He is forcefully direct when he needs to be. But Jesus does not insist on his own way. Even when he is preparing to go to the cross, he prays to God, "Let not my will be done, but yours." Jesus is not irritable or resentful. He does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in truth. Even when that truth is that we wouldn't know what to do with God's blessings if we had them, because we don't know what to do with the greatest of God's blessing, which we already have, God's love. Jesus fulfills the words of Isaiah 61. Jesus brings forth the promise of God's liberation, but sometimes we, like the people in Nazareth, who think we've got all the right answers, who think we deserve all of God's blessings, sometimes we need to see God's blessing of grace liberate the very people that we despise so that we can realize we actually do want to be set free by God's blessings. We want to be set free not of those people, but of our resentment of them. So that we can stop seeing God's love in part and see it fully and know it fully, even as we are known fully. So may we as a congregation strive for the greater gifts. May Faith Lutheran Church be known not only for good theology and great music. May we be known not just for insightful preaching and tireless commitment to community service. May people say of Faith Lutheran, "Ah, the people of faith, they are patient and kind. The people of faith, they are not envious, arrogant, boastful, or rude. They do not insist on their own way. They are not irritable or resentful. The people of faith do not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoice in truth. May it be said of us that we have everything, for we have love. And may we know that it is true. Amen.